pay you to question me," she snapped at him. "Just drive. America is a big place. Plenty of space for everyone. Now hurry up. We're losing light." "It's 7 a.m., he grumbled as he started the ignition. They drove for a whole week straight, from morning till night, looking at ads in newspapers and driving through neighborhoods in search of any for sale signs. They stuck to the east side, because they knew better than to look in the white neighborhoods. There was already a lot of disdain and criticism for the large influx of the southern Vietnamese who had come into Orange County, and Mrs. Dung was doing her best to avoid any violence or altercation again. She just lived through a war. She wasn't about to fight some white woman who kept going on and on about some bearded white guy named Jesus to save her soul. She saw what the white men did to her country, and saving souls was the last thing they did. But one day, Tang accidentally drove into one of those neighborhoods. He had gotten lost along the I-5 South, and because he was embarrassed by his English, he was too proud to ask Mrs. Zung for help reading the highway signs. He exited the highway, turned a corner, and another corner, hoping to find a way back east before she noticed. "Where are we?" she asked from the back seat.
"Sorry, go," he replied. "I'll get us back on track. The lanes are just so wide here. Everything really is bigger in America, isn't it?"
He gave a fake chuckle, hoping she wouldn't notice how lost he really was, and sat up a bit straighter. Mrs. Zung didn't say anything. She just observed how pristine the streets were in comparison to Little Saigon. She watched men carrying surfboards heading down the street, and women, their hair wrapped in expensive silk, driving past them in convertibles. One of the women waved at someone on the sidewalk, and Mrs. Zung saw how smooth her palms were. The woman didn't have working-class hands, unlike Mrs. Zung. She was able to identify every one of her scars. Battle wounds from flashing hot oil after making batches of egg rolls for the night market. The blatant wealth wasn't what stuck out to Mrs. Zung, though. It was that everyone seemed so relaxed, not a worry or a wrinkle in sight. The sound of seagulls made her look up, and she noticed everyone was heading west, inadvertently following them. It was an auspicious sign, because she knew immediately what was nearby, and her heart skipped. Ever since arriving in California, Mrs. Zung craved to be near a body of water again. The ghost sounds of the Mekong Delta kept her awake at night ever since she left Vietnam. Meanwhile, the Pacific Ocean had been calling out to her, extending an olive branch, hoping she'd take it. "Follow them," she commanded Tang, though she wasn't sure if she meant the birds or where all the beautiful women were going.
"Go, we're heading deep into a different area," he said nervously. "I don't feel comfortable being in this neighborhood."
"What are they going to do? Shoot us? In this neighborhood? These people have no calluses on their hands. They're the ones that fund wars, not fight in them. Have some courage. We belong here just as much as they do," she barked at him. "Follow the road."
Terrified of the matriarch in his back seat, Tang took them down the winding road, and Mrs. Zung rolled down the window, taking in the salt-encrusted air. She inhaled greedily, as much as her lungs could hold, because who knows when she'd be able to breathe air on this side of town ever again. Mrs. Zung's eyes followed the houses, her irises growing bigger and bigger. She drank in the white picket fences, the fresh-cut lawns, and the large windows that gave her a glimpse of how the other half lived. Out of the corner of her eyes, she spotted a for sale sign at the end of the block and screeched for Tang to stop in front of it. He managed to discreetly pull off to the side and parked under a looming sycamore tree that shielded them from the nosy neighbors. They sat in silence and stared at the littlest house on the block, both lost in thought. Tang thought about his mother back in Vietnam and how she would have loved to live in this house that overlooked the beach. Absentmindedly, Mrs. Zung gently tugged on her jade Buddha necklace. The stone felt familiar and comforting between her thumbs. It was a rather unusual jade color, because it had elements of both purple and green that faded into each other. Despite being centered by the jade, she was still swept up in a dream about her three daughters and imagined coming home with the keys to this house. The littlest house on the block wasn't ostentatious like the surrounding houses, or particularly eye-catching. There was nothing that stood out, aside from the faded green door that had been weathered by the ocean. But it called out to her, because it was the kind of home you keep in your family for generations. It was a home with four walls and a roof that you pass down to your children and their children's children to keep them warm. Mrs. Zung had nothing to pass down because she'd been forced to start over from scratch. And at her age, she didn't know if she could pull it off. "Let's go," Mrs. Zung said quietly as reality crept back in. Maybe, one day, she could live in a neighborhood like this. But that reality was so far away from where she was now that it physically hurt her. The longer they stayed in this neighborhood, the harder it would be for her to return to the life that was waiting for her. Tang turned the car on and took off without saying anything. Mrs. Zung willed herself not to look back at that house, unable to accept the olive branch. After a quiet drive back to the east side, Tang turned into a different neighborhood they hadn't explored yet. And as they slowly drove through, Mrs. Zung heard the strangest, most raucous music blaring from the car stereos, and her ears strained trying to figure out what language it was in. Children were dancing, playing soccer, and running in the streets. The adults were sitting on stoops, drinking iced tea, gossiping loudly, and peeling fruit. It reminded her of Vietnam. There was so much commotion and chaos that Mrs. Zung wasn't sure where to look. She felt nervous, being so far away from her own segregated hub of Orange County, because she wasn't white, she wasn't brown, and she felt uncomfortable in her own skin in this country. "What on earth is that music?" Mrs. Zung asked. "I think the Mexicans call it mariachi go," he said, grinning. "It's pretty fun, isn't it?" "Where are we?" Mrs. Zung asked, staring as if they'd been teleported into a different country. "We're in Santa Ana," he replied, as he pulled up to the end of the cul-de-sac, to a crooked blue house. "Here we go. I found this ad the other day. $67,500, I think it was listed at." Mrs. Zung stared at the house that looked like it was built by blind pigs and could easily crumble if the winds blew the wrong way. "It looks like dog shit," she told the young man. "Do I look like a dog to you?" He shrugged. "You didn't say anything about the condition of the house, just the price tag." He helped Mrs. Zung get out of the car. She felt all the neighbors' eyes on them, watching two Vietnamese people walk around in their segregated hub of Orange County. "We're a long way away from Little Saigon," Mrs. Zung muttered to him. "Go. We're a long way away from Saigon," he reminded her gently as he helped her up the stairs. "So, what do you think?" He stood proudly in front of the house, as if he'd accomplished the impossible. His only life's ambition since arriving in America had been to please elderly Vietnamese women, a replacement for his family. During their car ride, he had talked at length about his mother, who was still in the fallen city of Saigon, and how, one day, he'll be back with bags of American money to give to her. Mrs. Zung stared at the dilapidated house with the blue awning. Dying rose bushes lined the hedges. She stared and stared, trying to imagine the possibilities that could come with it. Suddenly, she felt even more eyes on her. And as she turned around, she saw that all the neighbors had gathered to stare at the two Buddhists on a block full of Catholics. She began to hyperventilate, fearing an altercation. She wanted to apologize immediately for invading their space, their territory, their home. Her PTSD still hadn't gone fully away, and she'd done her best to find herbal remedies to cure bad memories. But sometimes, she could still see the fire. But then, people began to slowly wave at her curiously. There was no "go back to China" or "call me cunt" being thrown her way. They were just as curious of her as she was of them. And she weirdly felt safe. She felt much safer here than she did at the other house by the beach. As she looked around the neighborhood more, she realized it didn't get any more American than this. "I'll take it," Mrs. Zung said, to no one in particular. As the young man drove Mrs. Zung back home, they began to talk more. Mrs. Zung began to grill him about which part of Vietnam he was from, his education level, and his plans for the future. He didn't have much going for him, Mrs. Zung would admit, but he was better than nothing. They came to an agreement at the end of the car ride, which was no more than 20 minutes long. When they arrived back at Mrs. Zung's one-bedroom apartment in Bolsa, she instructed him to wait outside. She went in and pulled her oldest daughter, Mai, out. In order for them to survive, her daughters needed husbands, even if they didn't want them. Husbands were useful. They gave societal protection, and every home needed one, even if she didn't agree with the reasoning in private. Mrs. Zung put her arm over Mai, introduced her to the young driver, and gave her a small push forward. "Don't be rude. Mai, meet your new husband," she told her. "This is Tang Nguyen. "What?" Mai burst out screaming, staring at Tang like he was vermin. She backed all the way up, accidentally shoving her mother out of the way. "I'm not marrying him. I don't even know him." Ming and Quyen both came running out when they heard their oldest sister yell, thinking she was in trouble. "You will marry him. The time has come for you to settle down. I've bought you a home in Santa Ana. The house will be under Tang's name and yours. You can use it to build equity and your new life here in America. This is for your future children, to build generational wealth." Mai began crying hysterically. "What kind of mother are you? What if I don't even want children?" Mrs. Zung slapped her across the cheek. "Pull yourself together, Mai. It's your duty as a Vietnamese woman to have children." Mrs. Zung felt a twinge of regret slapping her, but she needed Mai to get in line with her reasoning, for her to see that this was her only way out. Shocked, Mai touched her cheek and stopped crying, and her eyes became steely as she stared at her mother with venom. "I'll never be like you if I ever become a mother." Mrs. Zung fought back her tears as she looked at her daughter's eyes full of hatred for her. Every night, she dreamt that Mai's life would turn out differently than hers. Maybe she'd get a well-paying job one day, get into a position of power in society, and be well-respected in the community. But she knew the truth. And the truth was that none of the Zung women on that lawn would have those opportunities. But maybe their children would one day. And that's what Mrs. Zung held out for. "You will become a mother. One day, Mai, your child will look at you exactly how you are looking at me now. And maybe you'll understand what sacrifice means then." "I will never understand how anyone can be so cruel. I don't love him. How can I get married to him? Look at him. He looks like a garbage can." "Hey," Tang protested from behind. "I'm not that bad." "It's not about love, Mai. It's about survival," Mrs. Zung said, her principles steadfast. "You're a refugee in America with no college education. What chances and opportunities do you think you will have here without a husband and a family of your own?" Everyone on that front lawn knew that Mrs. Zung wasn't going to change her mind. Not today, not ever. She was of a different generation, who preferred living within the social constructs of society, even if they were archaic. Mai Zung made a promise to herself right then and there that she'd never force her daughters to do anything they didn't want to. She promised herself that she'd never turn out like her mother, because next time around, it would be different with her generation. The following week, A small ceremony was held at the Buddhist temple near Fountain Valley. Mrs. Zung grieved, watching her oldest daughter go from a Mai Zung to a Mrs. Mai Nguyen. It was a different type of grief. Though the person was still physically there, their old life was long gone. Mrs. Zung had felt that kind of aching sorrow before. It was always after giving birth, because the moment the baby had exited her, she felt a cavernous space in her womb. Mrs. Zung was forever stuck in the past, despite pushing her daughters forward. Mrs. Zung experienced that pain two more times, as she watched Ming become Mrs. Pham, and then Quyen become Mrs. Lum. But she never said a word, because it just wasn't the Vietnamese way to talk about it. That day, as she watched Mai walk down the aisle, wearing an ill-fitting aozai that she had sewn together in a week, Mrs. Zung felt her first and only regret as a mother. 7. Mrs. Nguyen, Mrs. Pham, Mrs. Lum. Mrs. Nguyen, Mrs. Pham, and Mrs. Lum all stood outside the gated White House in Anaheim. Two towering stone foo dogs guarded the front, their teeth bared, threatening any harmful spirits who dared cross the threshold. The three sisters knew their mother's house would have several layers of superstitious protection that they had to bypass. After all, who knew what other curses had been inflicted on the Zung women throughout their reincarnations? They weren't exactly the most well-liked or well-behaved. The foo dogs were the first trap. The second was a hexagonal talisman, a bagua mirror that hung above the iron door. The mirror warded off evil spirits by showing their reflection, and once the spirits saw their image, they wouldn't be able to enter the home. Mrs. Zung had seen enough evil spirits in her lifetime, both in flesh and celestial forms, and she always warned her daughters to be more afraid of the ones that came in human form than anything else. The mirror was noticeably turned toward the noisy Chinese neighbors across the street, so that the evil spirits would head in their direction. The shade was subtle, but loud enough. The three sisters must have stood there for what felt like an eternity, each of them arguing, barely above a whisper, about who was responsible for making the first move and ringing the doorbell. Ming and Quyen posed the argument that Mai should do it, since she was technically responsible for causing the family estrangement for all these years. She did make them pick sides, after all. Mai argued that Quyen should do it, since she's the youngest, and nobody ever blames the youngest. Quyen turned it around and pointed fingers at Ming, saying that the middle child was the mediator of the family, and that their mother wouldn't get mad at her. As the arguing escalated, the iron door creaked open, and out stepped an old man. He meandered to the garden, carrying a metal basket and a pair of gardening shears, humming a tune. His bifocals glistened in the sun. The three sisters shushed each other and watched suspiciously as the old man began to cut Thai basil, mint, parsley, and green onions, and plucked fresh lemons into the basket.
"Who the hell is that?"
Mrs. Nguyen whispered.
"Maybe her caretaker?"
Mrs. Lum responded back.
"Or a friend checking in? Maybe she got the son she finally wanted,"
Mrs. Nguyen said jokingly, though there was an edge of bitterness.
"What old person, especially an old Vietnamese man, would willingly take care of another elderly Vietnamese woman?"
Mrs. Pham snapped.
"Nobody has friends anymore. I can't even get my own daughter to call me back. My bones are about to give out any minute now. I could be in the gutter, and she'd call me back in 3 months after my funeral has passed. When she has time. Maybe if you hadn't babied her entire life,"
Mrs. Nguyen interrupted.
"Oh, like you're the best mother? You haven't talked to Priscilla in a year. A year! She's probably done being molded into your perfect daughter. Titles aren't everything, you know,"
Mrs. Pham hissed at her.
"Believe it or not, people can be happy without money." "Joyce is a bit strange, isn't she?"
Mrs. Lum murmured. Only poor people say that, Mrs. Nguyen said, turning her nose in the air. And those who went to a public university. Would you rather have your daughters crying in a Lexus or a Toyota? Joyce went to one of the top public universities in the world, Mrs. Pham started to respond, as she prepared to take out her sword hidden in her mind palace. Would you two shut the hell up? Mrs. Lum snarled, irritated at her sisters for botching their attempt to reunite with their mother. Someone needs to go up there and ring the bell. They all looked up and watched in fascination as the old man shuffled back into the home and quietly closed the door behind him.
Do you think they're together? That's impossible, right? Isn't it too soon for her to move on?
Mrs. Pham whispered. Suddenly she bowled over, grabbed her knee to steady herself, and winced in pain. Mrs. Nguyen eyed Mrs. Pham suspiciously.
What's wrong with you? You winced in pain, just like you did at the dim sum restaurant. The woman has been widowed for almost 50 years. Maybe she did remarry,
Mrs. Lum whispered back, not realizing what was going on between Mai and Ming.
Exactly how long did you expect her to wait? Till she's 6 feet under? Though I bet there are better options in the afterlife to date.
Too lost in their bickering, again, they didn't notice that the door had opened. And this time, their mother, the matriarch Mrs. Zhuang, a lioness, stood looking out. She leaned against her cane and watched her three cubs fight among themselves. Her white hair was pulled back into a neat bun that sat on top of her head. Her signature mole on the right side of her cheek became more prominent in the sun, as if it were a third eye who had seen it all. Once inside, Mrs. Mai Nguyen, Mrs. Ming Pham, and Mrs. Quyen Lum sat lined up on the couch, looking guilty, as if they had been caught stealing candy. Mai observed her mother, and how much she had allowed time to capture her the past few decades. She quickly recognized the antique dark jade Buddha necklace below her mother's collarbone. It was the most unusual jade necklace, going from dark purple to dark green. She'd never once seen her mother take it off her neck. It had been passed down from Zhuang woman to Zhuang woman throughout the years, and nobody knew where it originated from. The old man from before came out with a gong fu set and a pot of boiling hot water. He set the tray down, fanned out the mini cups, and poured hot water all over it, making sure it was pure enough to host the tea leaves. The wooden slats in the tray caught the water underneath, like catching rainwater. The sisters watched with respect, their heads bowed, as he put dry tea leaves into the pot, poured hot water into it, rinsed out the leaves, and repeated himself until the water ran clear. He then offered a cup to each sister and their mother. As everyone gingerly picked up a teacup, he smiled and raised his own glass toward them. When he smiled, he revealed missing teeth, and Mai couldn't help but think of her father, who had been deceased for as long as she could remember. All she had were clipped memories of him, but she could vividly see him smiling at her, also with missing teeth. She wondered if their father had been alive, if the estrangement could have been avoided.
Gamanju,
Mai said. She sipped her tea.
Save it, Mrs. Zhuang said. He doesn't speak Vietnamese. He's Chinese.
Oh, Quyen said, confused.
Why is he here? Bao is my boyfriend,
Mrs. Zhuang said calmly.
Companionship is important in our old age. You'll soon all understand, especially since all our ingrate children abandoned us. We play Chinese checkers and watch TV together. That's all we need.
Exposing his missing teeth even more, the old man waved at the three sisters, whose mouths hung from shock.
But how do you speak to each other? Mai asked suspiciously, staring back and forth between Bao and her mother. There's no need for us to communicate with each other beyond indicating when to flip the channel and say when we are hungry.
So, how'd you meet Bao? Ming asked hesitantly. as if she didn't really want to know the answer.
We met at the temple. Mutual friends.
Mrs. Zung sipped her tea calmly, though there was a dangerous tone in her voice, warning her daughters not to ask too many questions.
And is it serious?
Quyen asked, genuinely curious. She put her teacup down and stared at Bao, as if he were a zoo animal that was playing dress-up in a white sleeveless shirt, silk pajama bottoms, and slip-ons.
More serious than the fact that you've all descended upon my body like a pack of vultures? Picking whatever is left for your inheritance?
Mrs. Zung said as her gaze drilled into each of their faces. The sisters shifted in their seats. Though they were well beyond their adolescence, they couldn't help but feel small in their mother's presence. It felt like they were back in their tiny home in South Vietnam, when they were all kids, arguing about whose turn it was to ride the bike into town.
We didn't come here to seek money, Matt,
Mai said, coughing nervously.
We came to make amends with you, to spend your golden years with you while we can. You know, before it's too late.
Mrs. Zung sighed and stared back at them, barely recognizing them. Mai, the dramatic one, Ming, the quiet one, Quyen, the headstrong one.
I'm healthy, just in case you're wondering.
Have you been to the doctor? When was your last checkup?
Ming asked urgently, as she tried to cover up another oncoming sharp pain in her chest. She swallowed and suppressed the pain.
I'm not paying for a doctor. Don't be stupid. I'm fine.
I went to see a woman in Hawaii. Auntie Hu? Ling Hu?
Mai said, her voice shaking.
She mentioned that there would be a death this year. A death in this family. And she advised me that this is the year I reach back out to my sisters and my mother. Before it's too late.
Silence fell over the group, as all eyes stared at Mrs. Zung, as if they were waiting for her to be struck by lightning at that very moment. All eyes, except for Bao, who had fallen asleep in his chair and was lightly snoring, head tilted back, mouth ajar. Mrs. Zung did not blink at the prediction. In fact, she didn't seem surprised at all.
Well, are you sure it's not one of you three?
She asked nonchalantly. Mai and Quyen burst out protesting, saying that it surely had to be her. After all, it made the most sense, the age difference and all. Ming simply shifted her eyes down and stayed quiet.
And what about your other sister, Kim? Did the woman in Hawaii say to make up with her as well? She is your sister, is she not?
Mrs. Zung said, still acting as if they were having a regular conversation in line at the grocery store and not deciding who would bite the dust, like a macabre parlor game. Mrs. Zung had the memory of an elephant, and she was never one to let go of grudges easily. She could never forget that day when her oldest daughter, Kim Lung, came back into her life from the dead, and how her other daughters treated her, like she was an infestation that needed to be taken care of.
Have you also come to make amends with her and her two daughters as well? They are your nieces.
Technically, half-nieces, Ming started, but stopped when she saw Quyen shoot her a death glare.
Quyen quickly got off the couch, sank to her knees, and bowed before their mother.
Matt, we came to make things right with you. If that means making things right with Kim and her daughters, we will.
Mai guffawed and threw her hands in the air.
Are you kidding, Quyen? Stand up. We all got kicked out of the Santa Ana house because of that woman. That house was under my name, and it went to Kim and her daughters. I suffered through that marriage with Tang for that home. My daughters were homeless.
Enough!
Mrs. Zung shouted, banging her cane down.
I will not rehash the same arguments anymore. I gave my reasons back then, and those reasons still hold true to this day. I didn't know Kim was alive this whole time, and in return, I vowed to spend the rest of my life making it up to her, for abandoning her like that. I am not my mother. I will not abandon my daughters. How can you all call yourself mothers?
She began to feel faint and teetered on her feet. Bao immediately snapped out of his sleep and ran toward her, helping her get back on her feet. Nothing else needed to be said between them, because their need for each other was the only language that they spoke fluently.
Matt, are you okay?
Quyen cried out and ran toward her mother. Ming shot up and grabbed a pillow to put behind her mother's back. Everyone began scrambling and fussing around Mrs. Zung, making sure that she was comfortable, hydrated, and stable. Ming glanced behind her to see where Mai was and saw that she was still quietly sitting on the couch. The look on her face was indecipherable, but the one fat vein on the side of her neck was back, and Ming's face went ghost pale when she saw it begin to pulse.
Tai Ai, Ming whispered. Not the vein.
Mrs. Zung quickly recovered from her faint spell and pushed Bao's hand away. He was furiously fanning her with a palm leaf. She looked up and stared at her oldest daughter, who sat immobile, her stubbornness radiating from her like the remnants of a bombed war zone.
Did you come all this way to make sure that that psychic was correct?
She spat out.
You wanted to see for yourself if I was the one who would pass away this year, didn't you?
Mai folded her hands in her lap and stared at her mother, a mother who had turned into a stranger. Their eyes met each other, and they both had the same question cross their minds. Who really was the woman before her? Did they ever really know each other? Or were they put on this earth, forced to orbit each other?
You always loved Kim more than you loved me, didn't you, Matt?
She's technically your firstborn, not me, Mai asked quietly. Quyen and Ming both fell quiet, avoiding contact with their mother and Mai. Just like the day when their mother forced Mai into marriage, they stayed silent. And just like the day when their mother forced Mai out of the house so she could give it to Kim, they stayed silent.
Don't be so sensitive and dramatic, Mai, Mrs. Zung said. What's love have to do with any of this? I taught you better than this. I taught all my daughters how to survive. I didn't abandon any of you. I am not my mother. It's all of you who abandoned me.
How can we get back to how we were before, Matt? Ming asked quietly. Mai got up, draped her fake Louis bag over her arm, and wrapped her silk scarf around her head again.
Forget it, Ming. There's nothing to go back to. I don't even know why I bothered trying. Nothing ever changes with our mother. Stone never bends, and neither will she.
Despite her two sisters protesting for Mai to stop talking nonsense and to sit back down, Mai walked past her mother without another word. She knew that her mother wouldn't stop her.
Don't do this, Ming pleaded to Mai. Let's stay and work it out, just like you said before. Before it's too late. Come back,
Quyen begged as well.
I want all of us to be a family again.
Let her go, Mrs. Zung said, emotionless. She's always done what she's wanted to do. She was born a stubborn, foolish girl, and she will die stubborn.
Matt, Ming cried out, frustrated. Why are you two always like this?
Mai didn't say anything. She just kept walking. She walked past the family's ancestral altar, which was crowded with black and white photos of their ancestors. All women. So many women. Women who had the same thick, black rope hair they all once had. Women whose blood flowed through Mai and her own three daughters. Cursed blood that carried the sins of their mothers and their mother's mother. All because one woman, an epoch ago, fell in love with a man and ran away to Cambodia because she wanted to live for herself for once. For the second time in her life, Mrs. Zung watched Mai turn her back on her, not knowing if she'd come back. And just like last time, Mrs. Zung didn't chase or beg, because she knew that it wouldn't matter. Mai had inherited her stubbornness from her after all.
She heard Mai slam the front door, and then she heard it slam a second time as Ming and Quyen ran after her. The house grew still once again, just like it had been before her daughter stopped by. Silence was all Mrs. Zung had known the past decade. In fact, it had been her primary companion. As the sun set behind the house, and Bao shuffled off to his separate bedroom to get ready for bed, Mrs. Zung sat alone in the dim living room. She sat until the darkness engulfed her surroundings completely. She reflected on everything that transpired earlier during the mini reunion with her daughters, wondering if she had unnecessarily lost her temper again. Ultimately, she decided that it had unfolded exactly as it was meant to. Everything always does. She felt confident in this, because her own psychic was never wrong. The last burning remnants of incense on the ancestral altar began to die out, and she allowed the familiar musty smell to linger in the cracks of her home. She reached up toward her neck and instinctively thumbed her jade Buddha necklace, looking for a sign. But instead of the usual coolness, the stone felt lukewarm between her fingers, and she knew that it was almost time. Not yet, but almost. 8. Mrs. Ming Pham. Mrs. Ming Pham tugged on her jade necklace pendant as she waited in the entryway of the apothecary. Trying to distract herself, she counted the many different mason jars and burlap sacks containing herbs and questionable fermented liquids precariously stacked on top of one another. Then she quickly lost count. The repetitive humming of Buddhist chants played softly from an old boombox sitting in the corner on top of a pile of yellowed Vietnamese newspapers. The familiar smell of sandalwood incense wafted in and out from under her nose, depending on where the wind blew through the open window. Mrs. Pham was no stranger to this particular shop, tucked away from a bustling outdoor complex in Garden Grove. The storefront was a forgotten relic of Little Saigon, only remembered by the first wave of refugees. Now, it was overshadowed by its new neighbors, trendy boba tea shops and modern Vietnamese fare with neon signs that catered to Orange County influencers. Mrs. Pham turned to this shop for all her needs. She abhorred modern medicine. She hated everything to do with it. The smell of hospitals, the look of hospitals, the idea of hospitals. It always made her want to gag, especially when she gave in to the memories of her father being wheeled into the hospital after being shot in the war. He never came back out. For the past 2 decades, the shop had grown wary of Mrs. Pham's erratic presence. The staff lived in constant fear of Mrs. Pham, who would burst through the front door on any given day and hour of the week, demanding herbs and remedies to cure her daughter, Joyce. And don't even speak of the day before Lunar New Year. She'd come banging on their window the moment they flipped the sign to open. Despite whatever herbs they gave her, or their assurances that Joyce was just fine, Mrs. Pham was insistent that her daughter was, Dak be it, that Joyce was special. But Mrs. Pham was looking for a very particular cure, because she knew that being different came with its own set of grievances and hardships. She didn't want her daughter to suffer from loneliness. To Mrs. Pham, loneliness was the real curse. She gave birth to a distant daughter and was legally tied to a distant husband. Nothing was worse than living under a roof full of people with no one to talk to. On this particular day, however, Mrs. Pham came to the shop for herself to get some thuốc nam to cure her of whatever was causing her chest pain. It had gotten particularly worse the past month since their disastrous wreck of a family reunion at her mother's house. After that day, neither her sisters nor her mother had reached out. They were all back to resuming the same schedule they had during the estrangement, avoiding the TNK food market on Sunday, praying at separate temples, and going to different vendors for fake designer bags at the Golden West swap meet. Mrs. Pham's stress levels were affecting her sleep. forcing her awake every 3 hours throughout the night. She'd jolt up, decompressing from the strangest dreams about her ancestor, Wang Zung. All she could see in her nightmares was a faceless witch, cursing their family over and over again, plaguing them for generations. Mrs. Pham would shuffle past her snoring husband to the kitchen in her silk pajamas and grab any cold leftovers from the fridge, or fry up an egg, with Maggie seasoning drizzled on top, or haphazardly cut up some lap suong to put in her rice, with fatty bee crumbles on top. In those lost hours, deep in thought, and carbs, she allowed herself to cry. The store assistant came out from behind the beaded curtains and told her the herbalist was ready to see her. Her legs were wobbly when she got up, but she squared her shoulders and marched toward the back room, like she was getting a beer with the Grim Reaper himself.
"Gee, how are you?"
The old man got on his creaky knees from behind his workstation. He put down the ladle he had been using to scoop out a black, tar-like liquid into smaller vials and extended his arms out to Mrs. Pham. His newsboy cap covered what was left of his white hair, and his eyes crinkled warmly.
"It has been a long time. Clearly, I'm not doing well," she responded, giving him a side eye as she embraced his hand. "If I find myself back in your store."
He laughed.
"Come now, Ji. You know that everyone comes in for different needs. Not all of it is bad. Even good things need a bit of prodding along. Otherwise, there would be people out there who still wouldn't have the courage to ask someone to dance with them. Sit, sit. How is Joyce? Is she still in New York?"
He gestured toward the oak rocking chair that she'd sat in for over 20 years, every time she came running into the store. Mrs. Pham sank into the chair, allowing her knees to give out. All the tension that she'd been storing, from hiding her health problems and her family drama, to the psychic's prediction in Kauai, to being worried about her daughter, Joyce, suddenly released itself from her.
"Yes," she sighed. "Still in New York, doing who knows what out there. She hasn't returned any of my calls. For all I know, she could be dead."
"Ah, you know how children are when they grow up."
He waved his hand, dismissing her worries.
"They don't want anything to do with us old folk. Go enjoy your life. You should travel. See the seven wonders of the world."
Mrs. Pham harumphed.
"You know I don't like airplanes. That recycled air is bad for my weak lungs." "Well, what about just local travel? Go on a road trip. Explore the parts of California you haven't seen before." "You know my lower back can't be in a car for more than an hour." "What about... ah, well..."
His voice trailed off, smile glitching.
"Anyways, what troubles you, Jake? Is it Joyce again?"
He put on his spectacles and took out her big file, the amalgamated history of Mrs. Pham's hypochondria and idiosyncrasies. The folder was bursting at the spine, its frayed edges trying their best to hold together a splintered relationship between a mother and daughter.
"I've been having chest pain," she replied. "It rolls, like waves, over and over again, crashing against me."
"Show me where."
Mrs. Pham pointed at the areas in her chest, describing the times in which the pain would surface and how long they lasted for. The old man scratched his head, and his face grew serious.
"Gee, this is very troubling," he said. "This could affect your heart long term if you are not careful. Anytime there is pain near your heart, you must protect your most important organ at all costs. This pain is getting closer, breaching it, climbing the wall."
He took out a new sheet of paper and put it on top of her big file and began writing large, urgent scribbles. Mrs. Pham gasped, and she clutched her fake Louis bag to her chest.
"Doi-oi, I'm not dying, am I?"
She began to bawl.
"I'm too young to die. Damn that psychic!"
She immediately thought of Joyce, as she always did. She knew she had to do whatever it took to live. She was all Joyce had left, even if their relationship was hanging on by a thread. Was she the one who was meant to die in Auntie Hua's prediction?
I believe your yin and yang are imbalanced. Your current worries and stresses in your family life are causing these pains. If you don't fix them soon, it could drive you to an early grave.
How do I fix it then? She exclaimed. I'll pay whatever price is needed. I'll pay double, triple. Just fix me, Tay.
Follow me.
They went back out to the front.
He grabbed a little sack and walked around the store, stopping in front of certain barrels to scoop out a spoonful from each one, and then he'd move on to the next barrel. Mrs. Pham shuffled behind him, moaning and complaining some more, filling his ear about all the trouble her sisters had been causing her recently. But most of all, she complained about Mai and how bitter her older sister had become. After they completed a full circle around the store, they went back up to the counter, and the old man took out a mortar and pestle and crushed all the herbs together. He began to wax poetic about how the body always breaks down, as all things tend to do with age. Mrs. Pham was barely listening to him, too engrossed in her hatred of Mai. She talked over him, as she always did. The old man's gray eyes glistened as he began slowly turning all the herbs into a fine powder.
The first to go are always the bones. She was always the stubborn one. Then the sinew. Thinks her daughters are better than mine. Then your spirit. And now she's putting me into an early grave. And as your soul reincarnates, everyone blames Mai for breaking up the family. She should have just welcomed Geem and her daughters.
Ah, here we go, Chi,
he interrupted as he poured the fine powder into an old glass jar and sealed it shut.
Boil a spoonful every morning when you wake up, and one before bed for the next month. This should help.
Mrs. Pham thanked him and quickly took out wads of cash, wrapped in an old red rubber band, still complaining loudly about Mai and how she ruined everything by not simply accepting their half-sister and half-nieces when Kim Leung showed up on their front steps 20-some-odd years ago. The old man tried his best to hide his exasperation. Like everyone else in Little Saigon, he was sick of hearing about the Zhuang family drama. Surely these women should have gotten over it by now. He turned around and headed toward the northwest corner of his shop. This area was darker and dustier and wrapped in a strange, shimmering mist that could be missed if you blinked too fast. Mrs. Pham stopped talking, and her eyes curiously followed the old herbalist around the shop. How strange. She'd been inside this shop so many times. She knew every nook, cranny, inch, and price tag of every barrel. Yet that corner seemed to have appeared out of nowhere, despite the cobwebs. Like the rest of the shop, this corner was stacked with items and jars on every shelf, from floor to ceiling. Even the cracks between the jars had something stuffed inside. The old man rolled out a wooden ladder and climbed to the upper middle rack, blindly pushing and searching with his fingers. He reached deeper and deeper until his whole arm had disappeared into the shelf. Mrs. Pham thought he was going to fall in. He finally gasped victoriously. He retrieved a small wooden box with dark red engravings. Despite every item in that corner being buried under dust, the box remained untouched by time. He carefully descended the ladder and brought it to the counter. He opened it in front of Mrs. Pham and took out a small glass vial of liquid.
For your sister Mai. It might help.
Mrs. Pham cocked her head, staring at it suspiciously.
What is it for?
She lowered her voice so no one else in the store could hear her, suddenly worried about how all her complaining was coming across.
Tay, I'm not trying to poison her, you know. I was just complaining about her. You know how sisters are. I'm not looking for a permanent solution. You know what I mean?
Zhong ding yu dik tuk, kong gan niem kiu hang,
he said to her.
In true love, there is no pride.
Tik nyut hang.
Mrs. Pham curiously stared at the little glass vial in her hand as she tilted it up, allowing the sun to flow through.
How will this help Mai? What's in it?
He gave her a little wink.
ancient Chinese secret.
Seriously?
Mrs. Pham wrinkled her nose.
No, I'm kidding. Just slip it into her coffee the next time you see her, and allow it to work its magic. Your own pain will only be cured if her internal pain is cured, as will the rest of your family.
How much?
No charge.
Why? You've never given me anything free the entire time we've known each other.
Let's just say that we've all been cheering on the Zhuang women for a while. Consider it a gift from the spirits. There is only one cure for curses in this world, and I've been saving this vial for a long time. It's time it gets put to use. The world needs more of it.
Mrs. Pham stared at him like he had just spoken in Mandarin to her. But she was never one to turn down any free items, discounts, or sales, so she didn't question him. She tucked the vial and her new herbs into her fake Louis and snapped it shut.
Oh, and Jade,
the herbalist said.
Save a drop. Just a smidge.
Her ears perked up.
Who else would it be for?
He gave her a tiny smile.
You'll know when the time comes. A small drop is all that is needed.
She slowly backed out of the store, staring at the old apothecarist, chalking up his strange behavior to him being secretly in love with her all these years. Who could blame him?
9. Tao Nguyen. Tao Nguyen missed her flight back to Los Angeles on purpose. She sent an email to her investors immediately, saying that she'll take the meeting over video instead of being there in person. She claimed there was an emergency at the factory that needed her presence. She needed to stay behind in Saigon. The truth was that she wasn't ready to face the reality waiting for her in California. Her family. Her mother cried on the phone when Tao called her to tell her that she wouldn't be coming home after all. In a blood-curdling wail, she repeatedly asked how on earth could Tao miss her flight. She should have known better when it came to Saigon traffic, and she should have headed to Tan Son Nhut International Airport hours early, especially for an international flight. Tao sighed and set the phone down on her bathroom countertop. She switched the call to speakerphone. Her mother's voice rang out, lecturing her over and over again. Tao was used to it by now, being the youngest of three. She'd heard it all. She began drawing in her lip liner, then carefully applied a dark, sexy red stain. Her open suitcase lay empty, reflecting itself back in the mirror, reminding her of her calculated move. Her mother grew exponentially furious over the phone at how flippant Tao was acting. Tao, in a monotone voice, told her to stop worrying so much as she began drawing in a sleek, black cat eye.
Why do you love Vietnam so much? We escaped the war so we'd never have to go back there, and now you've bought a second home over there and moved all your business operations over there. Are you insane?
Her mother's voice breaking the sound barrier over the phone.
What are you doing over there all the time?
I need to be closer to the seamstresses. Pay them an ethical wage, watch over operations personally, Tao explained, for the millionth time. She knew her mother would call again in a few days, asking the same questions, expecting a different set of answers, but feigning the same skepticism. Tao pursed her lips in the mirror, making sure that her lipstick matched the rest of her outfit, a dark red, off-the-shoulder bodycon dress that exposed the kind of collarbones that rendered men unintelligent.
Just because you have a Vietnamese face doesn't mean you're one of them, her mother said.
Yes, ma'am, Thuy said.
You have an American mindset.
Yes, ma'am.
Don't do drugs. Watch for pickpockets.
Yes, ma'am.
Don't party so much.
Yes, ma'am.
Don't drink too much. You're going to get wrinkles.
Yes, ma'am.
You will never be one of them.
Yes, ma'am. Tao finished her eyebrows and did her best to assuage her mother. She knew the right words to work her magic, which was to tell anything but the truth. Her mother hadn't been back to Saigon in over 3 decades, so she wouldn't believe Tao if she told her how energizing it was, that the new generation had modernized it,
while keeping certain traditions alive. Saigon had evolved into a hub of tech, literature, music, and international businesses. Expats flooded the city, attempting to cash in on the Saigon revival. This opulence and decadence was only known to those who knew how to navigate the 24 districts, unlike the white men who only wanted to pass through Bui Viet Street, trying to fill their time with women and watered down alcohol.
"Listen, I have to go, Matt," Tao said. "There's a work meeting I have to get to."
"Okay, gone," her mother said, defeat in her voice. They both knew it was a lie. The time difference spoke for itself.
"It's been a year since you've been home. Will you come back soon?"
Tao stared at the clock, realizing that she was late. She said the same thing every time her mother asked this question.
"Yes, ma'am."
Her mother knew it was another lie, but she didn't want to break the fantasy for the rare chance that Tao really meant it this time.
"Okay, gone. Be safe."
Tao did a last-minute touch-up, grabbed her purse, slipped on some strappy kitten heels, did a quick mirror fit check, and roughly let loose some of the pink balayage wisps she recently dyed to frame her face. She pulled her off-the-shoulder dress an inch lower, exposing her sleeve tattoo on the left arm. Then she took out her phone, pulled up the Grab app, and requested a motorbike to take her to District 1. She walked outside to meet her driver, a young guy with slicked back hair. The humidity hit her like a brick oven, but she was used to the weather in South Vietnam by now. In fact, her body had adapted so well to it, her hair began to shine brighter, and her skin became naturally dewy. It was almost as if her Vietnamese body, born on American soil, was genetically meant to be in this weather. When the Grab bike arrived, the driver handed her a helmet, and she politely turned it down. She didn't want to mess up her hair, or her outfit either. She'd take her chances, whatever they were. As she wrapped her hand around the waist of her driver, he expertly wove their way through the organized chaos. The feeling of being surrounded by the thousands of motorbikes that boxed them in was still thrilling to her, even after all these years of coming and going from Saigon. Some motorists came so close to her that she could see the crow's feet lining their eyes. The men would flirtatiously smile back, while the fashionable women would stare at her, calling her a Viet Kieu in their mind. Even though Tao looked Vietnamese, they could instantly tell that she wasn't one of them, that she hadn't been raised here. It was just as her mother warned her. The wind blew through Tao's hair, and she arched her back and laughed as her driver sped up. She felt so connected, being in the middle of thousands and thousands of strange faces, all weaving around her, heading God knows where at this hour. She just felt alive, something she hadn't really felt before moving here. The motorbike stopped in front of a lively bar in District 1, overcrowded with an international and chic crowd. Sweaty, drunk tourists spilled out into the streets, while bored Vietnamese workers followed them out, tired of taking care of them. But they persisted through the late night, carrying buckets of beer in case they wanted to buy another one. Expats nonchalantly stepped over the drunk tourists, looking down on them, while ignoring the bar workers as they made their way into the bar. Young Vietnamese professionals lined the steps, smoking cigarettes, their ties loosened until the morning light came, reminding them to tighten it to continue the work grind again and again until the day they died. Tao stepped out, thanked the driver, smoothed out her mini dress, and walked up the stairs. She could feel eyes on her as she dodged through the crowd. Different accents and languages floated around her. British, German, French, American, Australian, Chinese, Japanese. It went on and on. Some were tourists, others were repeat visitors or weekend warriors, but mostly, this was an expat rooftop bar. Tao knew this bar well and expertly made her way to the second set of stairs, hidden inside the kitchen, known only to locals or adventurous souls, and walked all the way up the winding narrow metal staircase. The rooftop opened up before her.
"Oh my God! Tao! Tao!"
Tao instantly recognized the screaming voice and turned to see her Vietnamese-Australian coworker, Alexandria, come running up to her. Alexandria drunkenly embraced her.
"I knew you were going to miss your flight. There was no way in hell you were going to go back to America now, especially given the climate, just for a meeting."
She flagged down a server and requested two more shots. "Besides, why would you ever voluntarily want to go back there?" Tao laughed.
"My mom lost her shit, though. It's been a year since we've seen each other. I swear she was going to have a heart attack over the phone. I eventually do need to go back home at some point. I have Asian daughter guilt for being away from home for so long."
"The key word is eventually," Alexandria said, as the shots came, and she handed one to Tao.
"You think I also don't have Asian daughter guilt? We can't keep doing things for our mothers. We need to break out of these generational cycles and expectations and live for ourselves. We can't waste our 20s and good looks doing what our parents want, right? Think like a Vietnamese daughter, but execute like a westernized daughter."
Tao laughed at Alexandria's drunken TED talk and clinked her glass with hers, and they both took down the shots with ease. Behind Tao, a group of girls squealed and flagged her down, telling her to join them. They were her tightest group of friends in Saigon. For the most part, they all lived either in District 1 or District 2. It was a mix of Vietnamese-American, Vietnamese-Australian, a Vietnamese-Canadian girl from Montreal, and a Vietnamese girl from Paris. The common denominators were obvious. All first-generation Vietnamese women of the diaspora, the youngest in their families, and all drawn to live in Saigon trying to understand their roots. But most of all, they all wanted to go as far away as they possibly could from their families.
"Girl, we had bets going on whether or not you were going to miss your flight," Evelyn said.
"Pay up, Evelyn," Sarah exclaimed, holding out her hand. Evelyn groaned and begrudgingly threw crumpled wads of dong at her.
"I thought you had a big meeting in Los Angeles you had to be there in person for. With the investors? To set up the warehouse or whatever it is you do?"
Evelyn asked Tao. Tao laughed it off.
"It's the 21st century, isn't it? I can be physically in Vietnam and pop up halfway around the world in a little box to speak to people."
"That's my girl," Alexandria said. "Or shall I say, that's my boss."
"You can only be my employee if you actually show up to the office."
Behind the group of girls, a man cleared his throat and said Tao's name in a deep radio voice, with just a hint of a South African accent. The women rolled their eyes and begrudgingly parted the sea, making clearance for Tao to walk toward him. As the smile on Tao's face grew wider and wider, the faces of all her friends contorted with pure disgust. Sarah stuck her finger down her throat, pretending to vomit. Evelyn rolled her eyes so far back, they could have popped out of their sockets. And Alexandria made a gagging motion and quickly requested for more drinks to be delivered.
"Of course you didn't miss your flight for us. It was for Mr. Mediocre.